If I went out for any reason whatsoever, they followed me in their cars. They hoped something similar to what had happened to me in 1988 would repeat itself, and if it did, they wanted to be there and maybe even star in the whole ordeal. My grandmother was really upset with all this, and I didn't tell my other aunts and uncles because they had told me to stay away from the whole UFO matter. Because of the nightmares and all the people now around the house, I decided to move. I didn't want to cause any more trouble to my family. The thought one of those curious people climbing onto our balcony and doing something crazy kept my grandmother up all night. When she heard me scream in the middle of the night, she'd think someone had broken into the house and attacked me. I immediately moved into a small room in the center of town. It was so small you could barely walk amongst all my belongings. My family got to sleep again and the people left. I lied to Mama. I told her my nightmares had stopped. I'd sleep at night like a trapped animal in that little room. I was walking in my uniform. A dark road. Big black eyes that. I ran, and ran, and ran. I never knew if my neighbors heard me scream at night. How could I know? I wished the nightmares would stop so that I could go back to Mama's house. I hoped that one day I could leave behind those horrible nightmares. I wished that the images of beings of enormous heads chasing me down a dark misty road and of a houseboat swallowed by a violent ocean would leave me. I again started to feel like I was losing my mind, but I didn't know how to go up to a doctor and tell him that I needed pills because I dreamt about extraterrestrial beings. I think that the doctor would send me to a psychiatrist and that he in turn would send me to a mental institution. I honestly think that in some of these places there might be people who have had these experiences yet no one's believes them and think they're crazy. This was another one of my fears, that something like this would happen to me. I didn't get a moment's peace at work. To the people that approached me because of the information provided by Mr. B, I said that it wasn't true, and then I told them to leave me be. I felt my head was going to explode. I jumped like a rabbit at the least bit of noise. I yearned those days that I would peacefully lay in my hammock at the Tamarindo. If I ever regretted something, it was agreeing to with Mr. B to meet with the editor. After giving it much thought, I gave Mr. Martin some of the negatives. My brother Charlie had sent them to me the same way I had. The computer analysis of the negatives didn't surprise. The pictures were definitively real. There were no tricks of any kind. I was given back my negatives and these were hidden. Mr. Martin introduced me to several people who had had similar experiences to mine. Though at first I didn't want to meet them, I later thought that this might be helpful with my nightmares. It actually did help because now I didn't feel so alone. But it wasn't until I met someone in particular that I really got better. In regards to the pictures and my experience, Mr. Martin recommended I go public with it through the various media and forms of communication. Mr. B also insisted I do so, but I still wasn't prepared for that. They told me that my evidence without a doubt demonstrated that something was going on and that the governments were covering it up. They also said there was no reason for me to care about people calling me a liar or crazy because I had the results of photographic analysis. They added that humanity had a right to know of these things. I replied that their reasons were perfectly valid, but that I didn't feel ready and that the public reaction worried me. We had to think about how traumatic this information could be to a lot of people. I didn't want to be responsible for someone else's nightmares. I wasn't the right time. Mr. Martin understood my point of view, but the other one just complained about the money he was not going to make off of my pictures. After investigating my case for more than a year and having all the evidence, he kept his word and remained silent. He didn't go public. Chapter 11. Finally, one day it happened, that which I had so eagerly waited for. I was sitting in my hammock after having a conversation with Mr. Martin and some of his friends. They were asking me about the lost time of my experience. When they left, I was alone and deep in my thoughts. The grass around the area was tall since they hadn't let the cattle out in a while, and it had rained quite a bit the past few days. The breeze was playing with the grass. I was embellished watching the movement caused by the wind. This rhythmical movement put me in a particular state of mind, like hypnotized. As if in trance, I started to go over that night again. I went back there mentally. I didn't have to force it, I simply slid through my memories. When I got to the point where I lost consciousness in the car, when the little being opened my door, I thought I would lose that line of memory again. I kept watching the grass in that trance-like state. It was like the movement of the fingers of a pianist. I felt a mental block for a moment and then it gave way. The wall curtain was lifted and everything came back to me. It was wonderful, I felt free and at last I understood my nightmares. I'll never forget that sensation of feeling mentally confident in myself again. Not being able to remember made me feel insecure and crazy. With tears in my eyes, I came out of that state having taken my memories to the very end of the whole experience. Even though the information that I recovered was chilling, I felt happy at least for a moment, because afterwards I became depressed. The memory of those projections affected me and I also started to feel curious about the identity of those other people that were with me. Who were they? It turned out that the mysterious man dressed in black wasn't one of them. He was the man who identified himself as Amaran, the human being from Kar, and the one who spoke to me in my dream in the Tamarindo. I kept those memories to myself for the time being. It wasn't until much later that I told part of it to Mr. Martin. The name of the non-terrestrial human I withheld. Mr. B found out some time after. He was still harassing me, trying to control my life, and insisting I'd go public. I didn't want to do that. I pondered on trying to communicate with those other people that were there with me in that projection room. Would they remember what happened? Where did they live? They all looked like they were from Puerto Rico, but were they? I had so many questions. I decided I would contact them, but I didn't know how. Again, Mr. B came by the Tamarindo one afternoon, and yet again he proposed to make the necessary arrangements to go public with my experience. He mentioned that he and Mr. Martin wanted to present the case on a nationwide television show. He expressed how important he thought my case was and the implications it had, that the United States government could not now deny the existence of alien beings or their spaceships. According to him, it was extremely important the world knew about this. He said those things in an effort to take advantage of me and get his hands on my evidence. He knew very well that if the case went public, there would most likely be an avalanche of publicity, mentions, invitations, and juicy offers. He had only money and fame on his mind, and this showed when I told him I worried the traumatic reactions that the information might cause to children and the elderly. To this he replied that it simply didn't matter. He also said I should try and get as much money from Mr. Martin as I could, because allegedly he was going to publish a book that talked about my experience and showed my pictures. That afternoon he said things to me that I dare not write in this book. While all this was happening, something occurred to me. Herein was the solution to my problem: how to get in touch with the others that shared the experience. Mr. B kept talking, but I wasn't listening anymore. I was lost in my own thoughts. Before he finished what he was saying at the moment, I interrupted him. "Yes," I said. "Yes to what?" - he replied. "Yes to the television show and to the magazine article," I answered. His giant eyes got even bigger. I could almost hear the sounds of a cash register coming from his head, numbers and percentages calculated at lightning speeds. He took off without saying a word, perhaps so I wouldn't back down. Mr. Martin and I agreed that I would write the article for the magazine. In it I would call to all those who suspected or thought they might have had something strange happen to them in the date that I would specify. I was going to do the same in the television show. It was all settled and we selected a date to go on Mr. Francisco Ojeda's television show called Ojeda Sin Limite. Mr. Martin, another gentleman, and myself would be featured that day. A week before the show, Mr. Martin showed up at home with a very elegant woman. From inside his car he introduced me to her. They had come to invite to a meeting in the nearby town of San German. The meeting would take place in the residence of a Mr. Isamel Nunez and his wife Aida and their family. They informed me that the purpose of the meeting was to get together people who had had the same types of experiences as me and share notes. Also, we would go over some details before the show. Never before had I accepted an invitation from Mr. Martin to an event like this. This time was different. During this exchange, that lady smiled at me but didn't speak. I smiled back at her. After I accepted to go, Mr. Martin told me he would come by for me later. Afterwards in the car, Mr. Martin told his companion that it was the first time he had seen me smile. Mrs. Mercedes Laracuente made no comment, she simply smiled. Mr. Martin came back for me later that evening. This time Mr. B was in the car with him. When I agreed to go, I had no idea this individual was going to come, but it was too late now. We drove to an apartment complex in San German. The meeting was on the second floor. There were 9 adults and some children when we got there. Mrs. Mercedes Laracuente was very happy to see us, and everyone there was very cordial with me. I was amongst strangers but felt comfortable given the circumstances. The only thing that made me a little unnerved was that Mercedes Laracuente sat beside me in one of the chairs. I felt something strange coming from this person, some sort of energy. It wasn't something negative, it's just that I wasn't used to that sort of thing. It was like starting to sense emotions and feelings on another level or plane. Something one might describe as spiritual. Our hosts, Ismail and Aida, were very generous and giving with everyone. The meeting started with everyone introducing themselves and telling what town they came from. There were 2 main pieces of furniture in the living room arranged in an L form. One of them was like a love seat. In the larger one were seated Mercedes Laracuente, another individual and myself. The rest sat on chairs from the kitchen. Mr. Jorge Martin and Mr. B were seated in front of us. We were all formed a sort of circle. Mr. Martin then spoke, explaining the purpose of a meeting. Mrs. Mercedes Laracuente was the first in telling her experience. She told us how in one of these encounters one of these beings had removed something from inside of her. She felt as though they took a little piece of her. They had taken an ovule. It was later fertilized outside of her. The fertilized egg developed through a period of time during which she still suffered the effects of the experience. Sometime after, she was again taken to show her the product of a strange experiment, a replica or copy of her in an infant state. They showed her the baby copy, but they didn't let her hold her. She narrated her experience in great detail, and you could see in her face the various emotions she was going through. I felt for her and with her. Immediately I could imagine all the rejection and ridicule she must have endured for going through that experience. I could sense she felt great release to be able to express herself freely amongst all of us. I felt a sense of familiarity with this person. She was serene. She was seated with her back straight in great posture and had elegantly messy blonde hair. Who was she really? I felt a real connection with her. Her frail body reflected the exact opposite, strength and greatness. Everyone told their experience. All the while Mr. B interrupted everyone with absurdities. That night I opted to not tell my story but to listen and observe. Everything seemed curious and fascinating, at least until something embarrassing happened. Mr. Martin was barely able to speak since his friend had taken over the whole thing and was executing his monologue. We started to feel uncomfortable and we looked at each other. He went on and on about the experiences he had allegedly had. At that moment, something really strange started happening. I don't know how it started, but Mr. B's voice slowly began to fade away. I had momentarily fixed eyes on a cast figurine of a fisherman carrying his fish that was on top of a television cabinet. I then stopped hearing Mr. B's voice altogether and fell into a peculiar state, twisting and turning in a whirl of lights. I find it difficult to explain what I'm about to narrate, but I'll do my best. It was as if my spirit or soul left my body. While I was still seated next to Mercedes, my inner me had separated and was submerged in a place full of multicolored lights, purple, orange, yellow, and blue. All these lights were twirling around me. Slowly I was absorbed by this whirl. I felt accompanied by someone else I could not see, something who laughed as if enjoying what we were witnessing around us. It was a very strong presence. This whole situation scared me to the point that panic got a hold of me. I struggled to return as one would struggle to wake up from a nightmare. I was able to slip out of the whirl and come back to my body. When I came to, I heard Mr. B's delirious monologue and I realized I was holding Mrs. Mercedes Laracuente's hands and I didn't remember when that had happened. This surprised and scared me at the same time. I don't usually take strangers' hands like that, which at the time that's what she was. When I looked at her, I noticed she was looking at the same figurine I was when my short trip started. When I let go of her hands, she looked me straight in the eyes and said, "It was very pretty, wasn't it?" Her tone of voice was very serene. This disturbed me. "What is this?" I thought. "A witch?" She terrified me. I didn't want to sit beside her anymore. I immediately got up and went to the bathroom. I didn't understand what was going on. I even considered that maybe someone slipped a drug or something in the soda I was offered. I splashed my face with cold water. I felt strange, but in my reflection in the mirror I looked fine. All of a sudden the lack of trust and ignorance got together. I wanted to run out of that place, find a public booth, and call my family to come pick me up. I was so confused that I didn't even know how to get out of the bathroom. From the bathroom I heard Mr. B and his litany. I couldn't stay in there though. I thought of so many crazy things. I even considered that these people were part of a satanic cult or something like that. After a while I was able to control my paranoia and went back into the living room. Instead of sitting beside the witch, I headed for the balcony. The people there might have thought that I was being rude, but I felt I had no choice. I had to clear my head and the breeze would help me do that. When I passed between everyone, I wasn't able to look at that mysterious lady in the eyes. My body was trembling, so I had to grab onto the balcony railing. From there I could see one of the highest mountains in the west side of Puerto Rico. It's called the Monte del Estado. You could see the light that was coming from one of the towers on its top. If I hadn't been on a second floor, I jumped out the balcony to call my family. Suddenly I felt a hand on my shoulder. I turned and it was her, Mrs. Laracuente. Looking straight at me, she spoke. I didn't want to hear her or have her touch me. She told me not to be frightened, that she understood what I was going through. Her sweet methodical voice soothed me. She said I was going to have to be strong to endure what was ahead. In a moment's notice I stopped fearing her. What I felt was a great love that wrapped around me and enveloped me, a sort of maternal love. She kept talking in that enchanting tone. She said I should start getting used to experiences like the one I had just gone through in the living room, that I would start discovering latent qualities in me that were up to this moment dormant. She mentioned mental abilities we all possess. There were so many things I wanted to ask her. Yet I was still a little shocked by what just happened. I only asked what exactly had happened and where we were. She laughed in such a way that I immediately knew that she was the other presence with me in that whirl of brilliant colors. She said we're on a spiritual plane, a place where one goes to strengthen, to fill up on energy. To be completely honest, everything seemed incredible, madness. But the love and joy exuded from Mercedes Laracuente got me to start believing the things she was telling me. Mercedes Laracuente, henceforth Mercedes, and I hugged on that balcony like old friends do. Soon after, some of the others joined us, among them Mr. B. Mercedes and I watched the night sky while the others talked amongst themselves. It was cloudy, so we really couldn't see many stars. Suddenly I saw an object in the sky. I immediately looked at Mercedes and we smiled at each other. The object got closer. Mr. B noticed we were looking at something, so he tried to make out what it was. When he saw it, he almost went over the balcony and started to scream like a madman. "Martin, Martin, come quickly," he shouted. He came out with the others who remained inside and together we all saw an unidentified flying object, or UFO. It was triangular shaped, like a boomerang, and in its back it had many white lights. It flew slowly, so we were able to take a good look at it, and we can attest that it wasn't an airplane. It flew over right to left before our eyes, which had stopped blinking. Not making a sound, it flew into a cloud and disappeared. We were all silent for a while, but Mr. B ruined the magic of the moment with his theory that the object was going to fly again over the same zone at any moment. We all talked about what we saw and were very happy. We then went into the living room to discuss the details of the upcoming show. The rest of the night our conversations revolved mainly around the triangular object and the television show. All the while silly Mr. B kept watching the skies. By the time the meeting was over I felt I'd known Mercedes my whole life. Even in little things we seemed like old friends. There was something between us that was beyond the ordinary. Mercedes has now become one of my best friends. We've gone through a lot of unforgettable experiences together. So many it would require me to write an encyclopedia to cover them all. In a nutshell, Mercedes is a very special human being. I'll always be thankful for her. On our way back, out of curiosity I asked Mr. Martin if I'd fallen asleep any time during the meeting. He said no but did mention he had noticed something strange happened between Mercedes and I. Chapter 12. I was very nervous when that Thursday when you were going on the show came along. I'd never been on television before but I felt ready. I was anxious to find out who those other people who shared my experience were. That afternoon we drove there on Mr. B's old car. With us were other people who would participate on the show. Among the people who would be on the show with us was Andy, a fisherman who lives on the coast of Cabarrojo. On the way to the metropolitan area where the show was going to be taped we didn't talk about aliens or their crafts. I noticed Andy acted a bit more normally than the other people in the car. That afternoon I never would have guessed that in the future Andy, his wife Cindy, and their children would become such great friends. Mr. B drove like a maniac, but we got there alive. Mr. Martin, Mercedes, and some other people were there waiting for us. While I was scared out of my mind, Mr. Martin seemed confident and didn't look the least bit nervous. While we waited to be let in the studio, Mr. B told me there were CIA agents in the premises and that I should be careful and not to talk to anybody. Though what he said was true, he didn't have exaggerated the way he did. He should have taken into consideration my state. My knees were actually shaking. I thought that those agents from the CIA would grab me in any moment's notice, would take me out of there, and I would never be seen again. I thought of thousands of horrible scenarios but thank God nothing happened. The show started and everything went great. Miss Drudster was very courteous and kind with me. I was able to tell the public about my extraordinary experience with extraterrestrial beings. I made a call to all those who'd been there with me that Mother's Day. I was sure some of them would see the show and get in touch with me. I wrote my own article for Mr. Martin's magazine and two of my pictures were published. Besides writing about the experience itself, I again made a call to the others who'd been involved. Each day my desire to meet at least one of those people grew more. After the show and the magazine article, another series of problems began. At work, people from all over the island appeared claiming to have been there with me that late evening in May 1988. They all insisted, yet none was able to give me specific details, things I'd not mention on the show or magazine. I purposely withheld those to be able to ascertain who was really there with me. They only repeated what they'd read or heard. When I asked the key questions, they hesitated or made things up. All kinds of crazy people showed up in my life. I remember one elderly gentleman who claimed he was the reincarnation of Moses and that he had a message for me. I then learned that this person was a respected elementary school teacher. My God! I worried for his students. His message was that I should tell him all that the extraterrestrials had told me. Very clever, but it didn't work. I also met very serious people, but their curiosity got to the point of being a hassle. The religious groups were really frightening. Many said I was the devil's son. I remember a very uncomfortable episode in which a lady came by the tamarindo and started to spread holy water all over the place, even on me. I was really disturbed by her actions, but I didn't say anything. I let her finish her exorcism. The different UFO groups and organizations also showed up. Some told me the best thing was to unite with them and others wanted to form a whole new group with me. I always said no. I never knew such groups existed. Some of them were even very well organized, incredible. To this day I still receive correspondence from some of these opportunistic organizations. They've even had the nerve to ask me for money. Let me take this opportunity to advise you not to be fooled by unscrupulous people who ask for money for their UFO cults. They always try to deceive people with promises of grandeur, salvation, and alleged privileges over the rest of humanity. They choose those who are lonely or don't have many friends and try to suck them out of every last penny. They then proclaim them as the chosen ones. Don't be misled. Look for the truth on your own and only get close to those who are selfless. I met a lot of people but none of whom I was looking for. Some were very good and decent people. With some I have formed long-lasting friendships. Among these there's a group I've named Las Muckatches, the girls. I called them that because of the love and affection I have for them. They never pressured me, or asked questions, and always respected me. One of the Muckatches, whose name is Ana Ramos, always had wise words in moments I needed them. She taught me how to live by a very special phrase, we are slaves of what we say and owners of what we withhold. The way that Las Muckatches came into my life was very curious. I had gotten a job at a seafood restaurant in Bokaran because the whole situation at the Tamarindo was intolerable. This is a very touristy area of Garba Rojo where one can find lots of things to do for recreation and entertainment. Bokaran is located right near the beach. My hot dog stand was now being run by my other family, Popo and his gang. In the mornings I would go to the Tamarindo to make sure they had all they needed for the day's work. Work at the restaurant started at noon. One of those mornings Mercedes came to the Tamarindo with the Muckatches. She asked if she could introduce me to some people, to which I said yes. She then introduced me to Ana, Rosa, Brenda, and Doris. I automatically felt connected to them. To Ana I said, not knowing why, that she didn't have to cry anymore, that she'd arrived at the right place. I then found out that something very strange happened to Ana when she saw the television show I was on. She was watching the show when all of a sudden as soon as I started narrating my experience she started to cry uncontrollably. They asked what was wrong but she herself didn't know. She said that all she knew was that she had to meet me and talk to me. When we did finally talk she told me that she felt a very strong bond with me. And so it has been. Ana has become also for me a great source of strength. She's an extraordinary being, able to sense things before they happen. This I've been able to witness firsthand. I'll always be thankful for the Muckatches and their sense of humor and support. The Muckatches are indeed synonymous with paranormal. Though people like them I took as a blessing, the parade of curious people carried on in the Tamarindo, people who didn't respect my privacy or my feelings. I hid from them in the restaurant, which had become my refuge. There nobody knew me as the UFO man, but as Amori the waiter. Nobody talked about extraterrestrials and conversations revolved mainly around everyday restaurant topics. It was a relief when I got to the restaurant, I left everything behind. I never mentioned to my boss or co-workers the whole flying saucer thing. The interesting thing about the restaurant is that a little house that's across the street from it caught my eye since the day I went over for the interview. It was a small wooden house that adjoined with estates full of horses and cattle. The nearest neighbors were far off and when the restaurant closed the little house was isolated. There was someone living there but something told me that I'd live there soon. When I told my boss and co-workers that soon that would be my house they simply laughed. After a few weeks I still hadn't heard from any of those people I had reached out to. Business at the Tamarindo was booming. I'd be a liar if I said whole UFO thing didn't bring me clientele. Mr. B started to harass me again. The only things he talked about were my pictures and money. His real intentions were so obvious that it was shameful. He completely lost sight of everything. His desire for wealth had spoiled his mind. He insisted in trying to orchestrate my life, how to talk, how to dress, who to talk to and who to not. He was really starting to cross the line. When he spoke to others he referred to me as his case. He thought that my pictures, the negatives, and even I belonged to him. He really went too far when he told me that he didn't want to see me with homosexual people because this would undermine my credibility. According to Mr. B, being homosexual makes one a liar. If this is so then I'm the biggest liar in the world. He tried to forbid me so many things that it would be absurd to name them here. Many times he spoke about my credibility and how I should correctly present myself to people.